The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I mean, all people I know personally who I've seen like be seized by this brain virus, and they're not Jewish. They're, most of them are self-described Christians. And then the Christian Zionists who are, well, Christian Zionists. Like, what is that?
Right.
And I could just say for myself, I dislike them more than anybody.
The Heritage Foundation didn't become the intellectual backbone of the conservative movement by canceling our own people or policing the consciences of Christians. And we won't start doing that now. We will always defend truth. We will always defend America. And we will always defend our friends against the slander of bad actors who serve someone else's agenda. That includes Tucker Carlson, who remains, and as I have said before, always will be a close friend of the Heritage Foundation. The venomous coalition attacking him are sowing division. Their attempt to cancel him will fail.
You say Israeli derangement syndrome. It's not Israeli derangement syndrome. I certainly don't have it. We need regime change in Jerusalem, and we need it tonight. Okay. Well, everything that comes out of Netanyahu's government is a stone cold lie.
But I think there's the Tucker Project, which is to legitimize anti-Semitism and make it mainstream. And I think Tucker is confident that he can do it. I think he, in some ways, overweighs his own influence. But I think the Tucker scheme is this: I've got J.D. Vance in my back pocket. I've got Turning Point in my back pocket. J.D. Vance is basically a creation of me. I helped him get to the Senate. I recommended him to Trump for VP. He owes me big time. He will never renege on me. And as for Turning Point, I am the new Charlie Kirk. I'm stating all this stuff rather bluntly because that is, in fact, the best way to say it. I do think that it is important for the mainstream of the GOP and the mainstream of the MAGA movement to reject this anti-Semitic trajectory. Not to do it is not only to fracture, I think, in very destructive ways, the GOP, not only to drive lots of good people away from our camp, but ultimately to make the Republican brand absolutely toxic.
Ethnic cleansing in Gaza. I'm just confused why this idea has come around, considering the fact that not only does their religion not agree with ours, but also openly supports the prosecution of ours.
Yeah, so let's say a few things about this. First of all, when the President of the United States says America first, that means that he pursues the interests of Americans first. That is our entire foreign policy. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have alliances, that you're not going to work with other countries from time to time. And that is what the president believes, is that Israel, sometimes they have similar interests to the United States, and we're going to work with them in that case. Sometimes they don't have similar interests to the United States. And this example, the most recent Gaza peace plan that all of us have been working on very hard for the past few weeks, the president of the United States could only get that peace deal done by actually being willing to apply leverage to the state of Israel. So when people say that Israel is somehow manipulating or controlling the president of the United States, they're not controlling this president of the United States, which is one of the reasons why we'd be able to have some of the success that we've had in the Middle East.
As my friend Vice President Vance said last night, what I am not okay with is any country coming before the interest of American citizens, and it is important for all of us, assuming we are American citizens, to put the interest of our own country first. That's where our allegiance lies, and that's where it will stay.
And to me, this is a complete moral disgrace. And so, you know, Debbie and I were talking about it, and Debbie was like, well, Dinesh, you know, you never even used to be all that pro-Israel. This was just not even your issue. Well, it is my issue now. It's like become my issue, partly because I'm just outraged, not just even about the foreign policy part of it, which is the October 7th and the Hamas, but just the absolute invective that is being legitimized on the right. And really, Tucker here is the kingpin of it. I mean, some people are like, well, why don't you lay off Tucker? Well, the reason not to lay off Tucker, and the reason not to lay off Tucker for me as a Christian, is because if anyone who's Jewish takes on Tucker, all Tucker's followers basically come out with invective. You're a Jew. Go back. Leave our country. Your era is over. You know, take your hook nose and go away. How many shekels are you getting from Israel? I mean, this is what you get, right? You can't really throw this at me because I'm not Jewish. So it's like we have a responsibility, those of us who are not Jews, to call this stuff out. And it is worth saying, because there's no way to avoid this, that Tucker has actually become the leading anti-Semite in the United States, if not the world.
Wow, that last comment there from Dinesh D'Souza. He's been on this program a couple times. All this infighting in the MAGA movement. I was telling the team yesterday, I read this book back in 2007 while I was in Israel for the summer, called The Israel Lobby. It's by these two left-wingers going on and on about how the Jews control D.C., how the Israel lobby influences the foreign policy of the United States. I mean, to hear that from the radical left 15, 20 years ago is one thing, but to see so much of it now in the conservative movement, Israel derangement syndrome. We see how derangement, whether it's Trump derangement or now Israel derangement, how it just, how it poisons the thinking, the reasoning of some high-profile commentators. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last day of the week. I think I said on Monday that this week would fly by, and it did. Here we are on the last program. You can get to the live stream of this show at our Rumble channel or at YouTube or at our very own website, thetrumpet.com. Email the show. We'd love to hear your feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. So as I said the other day, I mean, so much of what is fueling this is because of Satan's hatred for the Jews, for all things Jewish. I covered it on the show on Wednesday. I'll repeat a little bit of it here in just a moment. But to just walk you through that longer cold open, I mean, you heard the vice president, J.D. Vance. He's asked about the genocide in Gaza, okay? And then whoever it was asking that question says, and you know, why are we supporting the Jews when they persecute Christians? And then you heard what J.D. Vance said. What a response. I mean, really, look at what he didn't say. This is Melanie Phillips responding to the vice president's remarks. Who basically was there saying that, look, the reason we've had success in the Middle East peace agreements is because Trump is not controlled by the Jews, and we've been able to apply some leverage on those Jews. That's why we've had success. We're putting America first. And you heard the Heritage Foundation. They're supporting J.D. Vance and Tucker. And, well, as Dinesh says, Tucker was a big supporter of J.D. Vance, getting him in the Trump administration. We've talked on this show about the many people who are in, the advisors who are in the president's ear. And you're hearing more and more comments, even from President Trump, denouncing what Israel does. Israel, remember, was just attacked 2 years ago. And more Jews were slaughtered on that day than any in history since the Holocaust. Melanie Phillips says J.D. Vance was presented with an unambiguously anti-Semitic suggestion that Judaism openly supports the persecution of Christianity, which was linked to ethnic cleansing in Gaza. And so her point here is that your automatic response is there is no ethnic cleansing going on. And Jewish persecution of Christians in history? There's quite a lot of persecution coming in the opposite direction, as she notes. JD needed to blow that out of the water. He needed to say it was a sick prejudice. He needed to say Jews had persecuted no one. He needed to say it was Christians who had historically persecuted and murdered hundreds of thousands of Jews. He needed to say there was no ethnic cleansing in Gaza. He didn't say any of that. You heard what he said. Hey, yes, we applied leverage. Those Jews don't control this administration. Melanie says instead, he said the Gaza peace deal only happened. She's got peace deal in quotes, as it should be. Gaza hasn't complied. Hamas is not obeying the rules of the ceasefire. Instead, he said the Gaza peace deal only happened because Trump put the screws on the Israelis. The Israelis didn't control this president. He left open the idea that the Israelis controlled other presidents. That's another lie. It's outright Jewish conspiracy theory. And this is likely to be the next U.S. president. Jewish conspiracy theory or Israel derangement syndrome. Whatever you want to call it, but there's an influence at play here that's fueling so much of this hatred, this invective, this anti-Jew sentiment. I'll play a few clips a little bit later from a podcast where, you know, the conservative says, yeah, I bring up any subject and, you know, it's support, rah-rah, so on and so forth. But you talk about supporting the Israeli state and they show up from every direction. How dare you support the Jews? Wednesday, I mentioned what Jesus said in John 4 and verse 22, that salvation is of the Jews. As my father brings out in this book, this newly updated The Key of David book, 200 and some odd pages, he says, Jesus Christ was not ashamed to say the Jews had a crucial role in God's plan. And what a contrast. When you look at the world today and how many people are ashamed to say anything praiseworthy of the Jews. Now, as I said the other day, I mean, like every nation, they've had their problems. They've shot themselves in the foot here and there. But look at what they're going up against. Look at the derangement that's on display. And why doesn't, I mean, is Sudan getting that kind of blowback for massacring Christians? Or what about the Chinese persecution on minorities in their country? You know, it used to be that some conservatives, they were really concerned about that. But now, you know, they're a partner. Now we're friends. Genesis 49 and verse 8. It says, Judah, you are he whom your brethren shall praise. Your brothers will praise you. Well, that isn't the case in these last days. But in ancient Israel, as I said the other day, I mean, Judah led the way. Judah demonstrated courage. Judah had a will to fight for God's army. Judah was a leader. Judah demonstrated some lion-like courage. And we saw a bit of that this past summer. But Bibi, now he's a target. Everything that comes out of his administration is a lie. So says Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon? Well, I think he's in the president's ear. from time to time. Certainly with some of them in President Trump's administration. Judah, you are he whom your brethren shall praise. Your hand shall be in the neck of your enemies. I mean, you're going to really go after your enemies. And they're going to be fearful of you. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you are gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, as an old lion. Who shall rouse him up? Compared to a lion, you see, leading the military marches of old. And notice, verse 10 says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah. The scepter won't depart from the Jews, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. That's Christ's return. And unto him shall all the gathering of the people be. I mean, God is going to gather in the whole world around this tribe, around this scepter, around this throne. You can see why Jesus isn't afraid to praise the tribe of Judah. The Apostle Paul said it's evident that our Lord, sprang from Judah. And God draws attention to it right there in Luke 1, when the angel's having this exchange with Mary, who is a Jewess, by the way, saying that you're of the tribe of Judah. And what's to come from you is of God. That tells you something God thought about that Jewish woman. God said she was special. The scepter shall not depart from Judah. My father says in the Key of David book, what does it mean that the scepter shall not depart from Judah? It means that a royal lineage, Jesus Christ, and salvation are to come through the Jews. And Jesus says that in John 4:22. What a vision. A royal family vision. And Satan hates it. So he's done it historically. Everything possible to denigrate, to destroy even the Jews, to wipe them out, to blot them out. Says the word scepter refers to David's throne and Jesus Christ's rule in the world tomorrow. God is about to point everyone in the direction of this Jewish scepter, the rule of Jesus Christ. He's going to gather in the whole world. I mean, this is something worth praising. This is something worth getting excited about. As it is, look at what we see in the world today. A world where there's so much darkness. There's so much, I mean, even the religious fighting and confusion that's on display in that cold open. Christian again. Well, I'm a Christian, says Tucker. That's why I dislike those people more than any other people. I'm a Christian, you see. And there's Christians on the other side, I suppose, that, as you heard, want to stand up and defend the Jews. And they see all of this vile filth just pouring forth online, on social media sites, and other places. Division between Christianity, division between Christians and Jews, division between Muslims and Jews, Muslims and Christians. As I've been saying this week, is this God's world? Is this what Jesus came? The Jew of the first century, is this what he came to establish and start? Did Jesus say, you know what I want to do? I just want to try to reform this world and have a revival and just try to get as many people saved before it's too late. Is that God's religion? If it was, did God have much success? Acts 1 says there was 120 disciples after 3.5 years. of witnessing perfection. Jesus went into the synagogues in Galilee, where he was from, and they rejected him. They rejected their own. A little bit of self-hating Jews in the first century. Not surprising. That's just been Satan's reaction and response every time. He wanted to kill the Christ child before he even grew up. Here, Jesus Christ's family was on the run to Egypt because they were trying to avoid, I mean, it was Herod, obviously, but he was seeking counsel from the Pharisees. The Jews were trying to kill Jesus Christ, the Jew. And that says a lot about religious division and strife in so many cases down through the history. I mean, religion's been the problem. And I'm seeing all these tweets from the news gatherers or screenshots of Christian movements, Christian denominations, trying to put the stamp of approval on Halloween. It's actually a Christian festival. It's not God's world. Even what should be common sense. I mean, just look at what they're doing. Look at what we're celebrating. But no, you gotta listen. If my little kids want to go and, you know, just eat as much candy as possible, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. In fact, it's religious. There's religious people even saying this. Coming back to Dinesh D'Souza, I think this segment from his podcast yesterday, it went on for about 8 or 9 minutes. Here's a bit more from yesterday, clip one.
Because what is going on here is that the so-called kind of Groiper group, which in a sense is now headed by Tucker, I suppose you could say by maybe Tucker is the co-chair along with Candace, and people like Nick Fuentes and others are kind of in this Groiper wing of the MAGA movement. They're the ones that have created this schism, right? They're the ones who have basically said repeatedly, and Nick, I'm sorry to say, was again today, he's like, you know, people like Josh Hammer and Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro need to leave the country. Leave the country? Well, they're U.S. citizens. Are you trying to deport U.S. citizens because they're Jews? So is this the kind of irresponsible rhetoric that now is going to become the mainstream of the Republican Party?
It's pretty interesting, isn't it, in light of Amos 7 and verse 12. That verse where there's another religious confrontation. And to read it, verse 12 of Amos 7. Also, Amaziah said unto Amos, O you seer, God's prophet, you seer, you teacher from God, go flee you away into the land of Judah and there eat bread and prophesy there. Get out of here. Go to Judah. If you go on and on about praising the Jews, about all that God has done through the Jews, what prophet is there in that tribe? Well, read what the Apostle Paul says in Romans 3:2. There's much prophet. God has some praise for the people of Judah who were used to preserve the Old Testament scriptures and the sacred calendar. And Jesus Christ, the Son of God, sprung from that tribe. But you see a satanic spirit in that Amaziah figure in Amos 7, don't you? Get out of here. Go to Judah then. If you like Judah so much, then get out of our country. Stop calling out the King's Chapel. Stop calling out our religion. Everything's going great for us. I mean, we're in the midst of a revival. There's a religious revival going on. Is there? Is it legitimate? Is there a change in our behavior? Is there any change in our thinking? Have we come out of sins? Are we overcoming our adversary, the devil? This is a bit more from Dinesh yesterday, clip two.
So Tucker would say, well, I'm just asking him a question. Yeah, he wants to kill the Jews, not me. Of course, when he said that, my reaction was, it was very interesting. So this kind of poisonous nonsense, I have never seen in my adult life. And I certainly have never seen it have any kind of hospitality in the Republican Party or on the right. In earlier years, people would sometimes ask me, well, Dinesh, you know, you're a person of color. Have you ever experienced like racism and bigotry and so on? And I've been happy to be able to answer, absolutely not. Even on the precincts of the far right, where I've been all over the right for 30 years, and the right is not racist. And I would have experience of it if this were in fact the case. But now what I ask you is this. Could a conservative Jew say the same thing about the right right now? Answer, regrettably, no. The conservative Jews would have to say, you're making us extremely unwelcome, extremely uncomfortable. You are clearly actually trying to push us out of the movement, if not out of the country.
He's absolutely right about that. There's a lot of conservative Jews right now that are very uncomfortable with the invective, with the harsh, as he said, the poisonous nonsense that's just all over the place. He talks about when he came to the United States, Dinesh, I mean, back in the 1970s, and how that, you know, at that time, the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, they didn't see eye to eye on virtually anything, but both were pretty much pro-Israel. And then you advance a little further on in the modern day history, and you've got the, you know, the rabid anti-Jewish sentiment in the Democrat Party. I mean, they're practically cheering on Hamas. And the Republican Party has typically been pro-Israel. Until the last few years, I guess. Like I said, that 2007 book, that's only less than 20 years ago. And now you see more and more on the conservative side that have just had a dramatic change in their thinking. How does this happen? What did Israel do? What did Bibi do? Well, if you listen to some of the commentators, they're just lying. The Jews are the liars. And then, as I've said this week, you look at who we're sitting down with and trusting. What an insult this must be to God. God said to Judah, or about Judah in Genesis 49, your brothers will praise you. Your brothers. And we don't even know we're their brothers because we don't have the master key that unlocks all of Bible prophecy. Well, this church does. You can write for a free copy. You can call our operators and request the United States and Britain in prophecy of all the Jew hatred in the world. And there's a lot of it. That the point of the spear is in the U.S. and Britain? That's right. What does that say? What does that say about our nations, and about where we are in Bible prophecy? And does it concern anyone to see all of this unraveling? To see all these curses set in? I don't know much about this conservative commentator, but it's from a podcast, and the discussion topic is Israel. His name is Brandon Tatum, clip 10.
And there's another dynamic, and I'm sure we'll get to that point. Now, if you support Israel, I have never had people be more openly racist against me until I supported Israel. So now that's another, like, we go on the table, a perspective is like, you're conservative now, you voted for Trump, you have no exceptions, but they still kind of hold off a little bit. You support Israel, all bets are off. They can say they want to kill you, and everybody will turn a blind eye to it.
There's a black conservative saying he's just fine in the conservative movement until he voices support for Israel. play clip 11.
Some of the other gentlemen I interviewed that were in IDF said that there was civilians that were involved too. It wasn't just militants. There were civilians that were coming into Kabul, stealing stuff, raping people, and doing all kinds of stuff. And I'll tell you this, one, my only regret with the Gaza-Israel conflict, my only regret is that I didn't go harder against the Gazan citizens. I gave them a pass, and I shouldn't have. Most of them, I would argue, that I saw, and that for IDF soldiers and other people that live there are saying, is that, no, they celebrated this. They were, a lot of them were celebrating this. You could see them on it. Remember the chants they were doing? They were taking them in there, they chanting. And like some of the hostages, one of the guys that I interviewed said when he went in, they went to a mosque first. And the civilians were taking him from Hamas and wanted to lynch him in the middle of the street. Hamas had to take him back from the citizens to take him into the tunnels. He said before they went into the tunnels, because there was not enough room in the tunnels, they had too many hostages. And so they would put them in residence of regular citizens. And I asked him, I said, do you think that this was done against their will? Like, meaning that they were afraid of Hamas, so they had to bring, did they treat you right or whatever? He's like, no, they were gladly supportive of what Hamas was doing. And these people were regular civilians.
Polls bear this out. They have a majority of support, not even just in Gaza, in the West Bank too. And you would think, of all people, of all parties, of all movements that should be able to recognize this, what we're going up against, the hatred for Jews, the celebrations for a Halloween-like horror movie that happened in real time 2 years ago. You would think the conservatives would be able to see this clearly as black and white. But not so. Play clip 12.
Do you have a sense of why your conservative colleagues and friends don't see the facts that you're talking about?
I don't know. It's just very difficult because I don't understand it. That's why I go back to thinking this must be spiritual. It doesn't logically make sense.
Right.
It's not logically consistent with what conservatives have been standing for all of this time. Why all of a sudden conservatives are so anti-Semitic and so brainwashed? It's not about the anti-Semitism part of it as much as it is that they're brainwashed. When have conservatives ever just fallen for things that they fall for as it relates to Hamas? We would never accept this in any other way. No, we would never accept a terrorist group.
He doesn't know, but he does say it's got to be a spiritual problem. And he's right about that. There is a real spirit world, and it's just stirring up all of this this hatred, this deranged emotional reactions. IDS, Israel Derangement Syndrome. We're seeing what it's doing to one of the most popular commentators in the country. Well, two of them. And then now the Heritage Foundation. It's just like some of some of the main conservative voices in 2015 and 16. I mean, and they were go-to sources of good information. And then along comes the orange man. And it twisted and it warped their thinking, their columns, their reasoning, their commentary. It's happening all over the place. And it's a sign. Ephesians 2 and verse 2, it shows that the devil's the prince of the power of the air. So many of these commentators are smart people. How do you explain that there's so many in your movement that don't see this or understand this? Well, they've been brainwashed. They've consumed propaganda. They're fueled by hatred. And it's a spiritual problem. Here's one more from the same commentator, clip 13.
To me, it's a spiritual divide between good and evil. And there's good on this side, and there's evil on the right and the left on this side. Somebody that's a prominent figure said this on their podcast not too long ago, is that they are starting to agree with the left. And this is a chance for the left and the right to come together against Israel. So it has become no longer right-left. It's become right-wrong. Like, these people over here, in my opinion, are being spiritually led by the devil. And I know it's a strong statement. I really believe that with my heart. The devil is deceiving people, that they cannot see the reality of what's going on.
Good for him. As I said, I don't know much about him. I'm going to have to find his podcast. Listen to him a little more often. How do you explain it? Well, there's a real evil spiritual world, that's for sure. Lee Smith has a great article out about China that was in the news big time yesterday. Big deal. Xi and President Trump, they're close friends. They're friends now because there's deals to be made. And as Lee Smith notes, China supports Hamas. China supports Russia in Ukraine. And on it goes. Basically, it's trying to oppose and resist America everywhere. Everywhere. That's the reality. And he just wrote a book, by the way, Lee Smith, about the China Matrix. He's got quite an understanding of this topic. It says, shortly after October 7, 2023, Israeli forces sorting through the remains of the 1,200 people killed during the deadliest attack on Israel since the 1973 Yom Kippur War recovered drones that Hamas and other Iranian proxies had used to target Israeli civilians. Officials found that the unmanned aerial vehicles contained multiple U.S. origin electronic components. And further investigation showed that these parts had been procured by Chinese firms, then transferred to Iranian front companies, which in turn passed them on to Hamas. There's China helping Hamas kill Jews. The Iranians distributed U.S.-made technology bought by the Chinese to other proxies as well, including the Houthi rebels. It says further on, although people don't readily make the connection, this episode from the Middle East throws into sharp relief the nature of the U.S.-China power competition. Indeed, though observers like to frame President Trump's policy on China narrowly as a trade war, tariffs and other economic measures are simply instruments the White House is deploying in a larger war against the China axis. And one of the points he makes in his recent book is that, I mean, this has been an ongoing war for decades. Decades. The confusion goes back much further. Well, he gives some important history, but, you know, he's got some, in his book, I forget the name of it, The America We Deserve, The China Matrix is Lee Smith's book, and he quotes from President Trump, who wrote a book with some other guy back in the year 2000, 25 years ago. And as you know, if you saw Trump campaigning in 2016, I mean, it was largely against China. And it's more than just unfair trade practices and tariffs and that sort of thing. I mean, they're actively supporting America's enemies, undermining America's influence around the world, undermining its power. Because they want to replace us as the superpower on earth. They're an adversary. This book from 2000, quoting Trump, he says, China doesn't aspire to a strategic partnership. It sees us as a rival. Well, if it was true in 2000, is it true today? And if not, what changed? In some ways, you'd like to ask the president, you know, what changed even since 2016 and 2017? He went after China head on and exposed so many of the China class, as he calls it in his book, the ruling class here in the West, the elites, who are being paid off by the China lobby. But don't worry about the China lobby, because we have the Israel lobby to worry about. And it's much more dangerous. They used to control presidents, but not this one. He, according to Vice President Vance, I mean, President Trump, he is not controlled in any way by the Jews. And that's why he has leverage. And that's why he can really tighten the screws on those Jews and get a deal done with Hamas, who's supported by China and who's a trade partner, China. You see how, I mean, I was telling my wife this morning, everything, every system, every component, every institution that you see in this world, I mean, it's proof positive that this is not God's world. I was talking this morning about just the simplicity of God's truth. Well, let me just read it to you. John chapter 21, the very last book. Sorry, the very last verse of this book, the Gospel of John. John 21 and verse 25. It's a fascinating scripture. It just kind of sets your mind on fire with imagination and speculation and meditation. John 21 and verse 25, it says, "And there are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written." I mean, as it is, you've got, most Bibles have about 150 pages in the Gospels, the four accounts. Of course, the entire Bible is Jesus Christ in print. So, I mean, he authored Genesis and Revelation too. But this, just for study purposes, you've got Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, about 150 pages. And John here at the end of it saying, you know, if we covered every event and activity in Jesus Christ's life, it'd fill up entire libraries. As it is, it's 150 pages, and it's everything that you need to know. And don't worry about the 18-year gap between age 12 and age 30. You've got the synopsis, you've got the key lessons, and in some cases you've got some overlap because there's certain events that are mentioned in all four Gospels. And as I was telling the students, you read the last few verses of Ecclesiastes 12, and you see why. I mean, it's not like God is against going in depth into a subject, but you know the way it is in your typical bookstore of today. There's maybe a tiny little corner of some decent material that you might be interested in. I mean, if you're a serious thinker, and all the rest of it is trash. It's garbage. This is the foundation of all knowledge, the Holy Bible. And even the content in this Bible is incredibly brief. I mean, given the coverage, I mean, we're looking at, I guess you could say 4,000 years if you say, well, it was finished in the first century with the canonization. But I mean, it covers the whole sweep of God's purpose and plan. Get these 150 pages into your heart. Solomon said at the end of Ecclesiastes of the making of books, there's no end. I mean, man has just produced millions and millions and millions and millions of books, especially since the printing press was invented centuries ago. But happy for us, Solomon says, here's the conclusion of the matter. Here's the point. Fear God and keep his commandments. Jesus did that perfectly. He never did commit one sin. And guess what traditional Christianity basically says about Jesus Christ, his life, his ministry, that he came as a smart aleck son, he didn't fear his father, and he basically said the commandments are out the window. Or maybe at best, I kept the commandments for you. You don't have to do anything. It's exactly the opposite of the point God is making all through the scriptures. And look, there's millions and millions of books. And you see just in all of that how much disagreement, division, will worship, worshiping human opinions there is. It's all over the place. And God says, look, I've crystallized it down to these 150 pages. Now look into this life and look at perfection and then strive to follow it. Emulate that. You've got a perfect example in Jesus Christ. And of course, you know, because of the trajectory he was on, even though there's precious few details in there about life as a teenager or as a young man in his 20s, when his ministry started, and then all of a sudden there's plenty of detail, you look at Matthew 4 and he was ready for the titanic struggle of the ages because he had been thoroughly prepared. His education covered every topic, and it was grounded in the Word of God. By every topic, of course, I mean every topic of importance. He came from a large family. I mean, people can even look into that. There's entire verses that say, here's the name of his four brothers. His mom was Mary. His legal father was Joseph. And then another relative, no doubt, Joseph of Arimathea. He was a prominent friend of the family or maybe an uncle. They read through all of that detail and say, well, no, it's not possible that Mary had a family. She was she's a goddess. This is what men have told me. So it must be cousins or something like that. I mean, we can't even agree on 150 pages. What does that say about human reasoning, about the heart of man? I mean, God made it. It's not like you can't get to depth in studying 150 pages. There's unlimited depth in this study. But at the same time, he made it easy, I'd say. Just look at these 150 pages and just believe it. Just accept, fear God and keep his commandments. There's a simplicity in true religion. And what complicates it, what confuses matters, is sin, always. Not keeping the commandments. There's entire books, there's entire walls of commentaries that basically go into their study of the Bible to try to reason around the truth of the Bible or to impose their views and beliefs on the Bible. Mr. Armstrong, he used to say, if you grew up Methodist, then you became a Methodist preacher, you taught the doctrines of the Methodist Church. Or if Presbyterian, it's Presbyterian. And he said, I didn't go to any of those. I wasn't even religious. In fact, I went into the study of the Bible trying to disprove the truth because I didn't want to receive the truth. I didn't want to accept the truth. But in the end, he did. He did accept it. You know why? Because he feared God. And he just looked at the commandments and said, just take any of them. I mean, you talk about simplicity. You look at the tax code as one example for how things are going to be different in the world tomorrow. Okay, this is God's program. This is God's economy. We've got to tithe on all that you, on all of your income. And that's it. It's simple. The commandments are that same way. You look into the commandment for the Sabbath, for example. There's, what, 3 or 4 verses? You know, stop working, shut things off, preserve that holy day. I mean, keep the standard where God set it in Genesis 2. It's a wonderful world when you think about the world tomorrow, as I plugged the other day, when the whole of this world is going to be based on the teachings of the Holy Bible, and everyone the world over is going to be taught to fear God and to keep the commandments. God gave us everything that we need in his inspired word. All scripture is given by inspiration of God. In this book, you've got everything that you need to be transformed into a God being, to be renewed daily through Bible study and prayer, to draw closer to God, the most important relationship any of us have. And also as part of that, that law of love, to learn how to get along with and to love fellow man as well. That's the essence of God's law. Putting God above all else, loving God more than anything else, as I said yesterday, and loving your neighbor as yourself. We have another installment of World Watch. That's what it's called. And I think we have just enough time to squeeze that in here at the end of the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.
Britain should consider sharing nuclear weapons with Germany, top defense leaders told The Telegraph in an article published October 25th. Britain has already agreed to work with France on its nuclear program, and France is in talks with Germany over sharing nuclear weapons. Some hope that Britain will also have that discussion with Germany. Former NATO Secretary General Lord Robertson said this should have happened a long time ago. If Russia continues to deploy nuclear rhetoric, it's going to force some decisions to be made inside Europe as a whole, he said, while mentioning growing concerns over how long America will continue to defend Europe. Sharing weapons capable of ending the world with another country certainly looks a lot like madness. Yet Britain is already treading this path. To read more about Britain's trust in Germany and where it is leading, read Aiding the Enemy. After months of political chaos, many Frenchmen want to ditch democracy altogether and follow a strong leader, a new poll published by Le Monde on October 21st revealed. This is a profoundly important trend to watch in European nations because of Bible prophecy. This development in France is especially prevalent among those under age 35, where 42% believe another system would be at least as good as democracy. The 13th annual French Fractures survey of 3,000 respondents found that 96% are dissatisfied or angry about the state of the country. 85% say France needs a real leader to restore order, and 81% say democracy is not working for them. The newspaper called these symptoms of France's democratic crisis, in which the already yawning rift between voters and their representatives appears to be widening. France has gone through 7 governments in just over 3 years. Almost all other European governments are struggling with similar problems. Many passages in the Bible prophesy of the emergence of a German strongman, but the Bible also prophesies that this man will lead a group of other strong leaders. France's politics are already shifting in an authoritarian direction. To learn more about the future of European politics, read A Strong German Leader is Imminent. China, India, and Brazil are poised to lead the November Climate Change Conference of Parties, or COP30, the South China Morning Post reported on October 19th. These nations, China in particular, are grabbing the helm in this summit as the United States disengages from international green initiatives. Initiatives such as COP30 and the Paris Climate Agreement are branded as efforts to reduce reliance on fossil fuels and restore global ecological health. But as the Trumpet wrote after a previous COP summit, the true goal of elites controlling the climate change conversation is to create a new world order by attacking American dominance in every category, including energy. This is why international environmental initiatives push the U.S. to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, while leaving China, the world's worst polluting nation by far, unfettered. To better understand China's ambitions to use environmentalism to increase its power, read Weaponizing Environmentalism. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.